I'd like to thank Theo and Ben for inviting me to PI. It's my first time here. It's very fancy. It's very nice. I mean, we're literally in the sky room. Okay, so today I'm going to talk about braided commutative algebras. It's a joint work in progress, or actually in preparation with my co-author, Robert Lawitz, who's a postdoc at Rutgers, and he's actually on the market. So just be aware of that. Okay, so what do I actually like to do? One of my main interests is in quantum symmetry. Well, what exactly do I mean by that? I like to study quantum symmetry in the context of actions of Hopf algebras on, let's say, K algebras. All right. So one main advantage of this framework is that this really behaves well under deformation. So for instance, if you're interested in studying symmetries of, let's say, an object or an algebra, you might want to study its group actions by odd morphisms or Lie algebra actions by derivations. However, groups in Lie algebras don't deform. But if you were to take the group algebra or universal enveloping algebra of the Lie algebra, the Hopf algebra, and you can perturb that structure in various ways. So like Hopf algebras for that reason. But for the purposes of this talk, I really want to discuss how quantum symmetries in this context, it has a really convenient categorical framework. Okay, all right, so the goal, what I want to do here is I want to construct and actually use algebras that are commutative, whatever that means, commutative in categories of certain H modules. Okay, so I'm trying to keep this really down to earth. If you have any questions, let me know. Let's make this goal a little more precise here.
H a fixed Hopf algebra?
H is going to be a variety of things. So let's see. Let's take an algebraic structure. H. All right. So let's say that H is just an algebra for now. Okay. So that means that it's going to be a vector space equipped with, let's say, a multiplication, which I'll use graphical calculus for, and a unit. Okay, if you want to consider its category of modules, category of representations, well, as we know, it's just H modules, nothing really interesting in it. And moreover, if you wanted to consider algebraic structures, in C, well, there's really not much you can do here. It's just sort of boring. However, if you were to tack on a bit more structure, start off with a K algebra, and tack on a compatible co-multiplication and co-unit, so that now you get a bi-algebra, well, then we're in business because this category is now monoidal. So it comes equipped with the tensor product. And once you have a tensor product, you can start building algebras in your category. So you could talk about the category of algebras in C, as well as coalgebras. Okay. All right, well, we're not yet at commutative here, but let's keep going. Say, for instance, I wanted duals, like I wanted dual objects in my category. Well, for this, you need to take a bi-algebra and also tack on an antipode to get a Hopf algebra over K. In this case, you get a rigid monoidal category. So what this means is not only do you have a tensor product, you also have dual objects. And what kind of algebraic structures do you get here? Well, you still get algebras and coalgebras, but in a sense, you also get, I guess, dual algebras, if you like. So for example, you can take an object in C and build its tensor algebra, but you can also build the tensor algebra on its dual. So maybe I should write the incompletion of C, because this is a large algebra and it might leave it as well. So here you have that tensor product of modules are in the category. Here you have now that Hom spaces and duals are in the category. So you can even, if you want, build cohomology algebras over here or X algebras, lots of gadgets. But again, the goal is to study commutative algebras in monodal categories. So for this, we really need, if we were to start off here, we need to pick up a quasi-triangular structure. So let's take either a bi-algebra with an R matrix or a Hopf algebra with an R matrix. So something quasi-triangular. All right, now here we end up with a category that's now braided, possibly rigid, monoidal. Now, what this means is that you have a braiding. So you have C, tensor product, some other stuff, and a braiding, which I'll denote by psi. And psi is just going to be a collection of a bunch of maps, let's say psi going from V tensor W to W tensor V for all V and W in your category. And once you have this switch map, you can start building bi-algebras in your category, also Hopf algebras in your category, and for the purpose of this talk, commutative algebras as well. So what exactly do I mean by commutative algebra? I mean that I have A, it's an algebra, but you want that the multiplication map is the same thing as applying the braiding on A with A and then composing it with the multiplication. Okay, so just as you would expect. All right, any questions so far? Yes?
Why do you need the quasi-triangularity to define bi-algebras? It seems like you could do that in the second line.
Oh, here? So for compatibility between the multiplication and co-multiplication, you need to be able to swap. Yeah. It's not obvious. Not obvious. Okay, so some graphical calculus. Let me give this I don't really need it for this talk, but usually it's denoted by a plus. As you can see, I'm reading from top to bottom.
Sorry, the product, I'm confused. You wrote MA is MA times phi A, so which one is 2MA?
Where?
The last equation you wrote.
This one here?
Yes.
So you want
MA on the left and MA on the right.
So. Yeah, so you want this to hold for commutativity. You want the multiplication to be the same thing as swapping and then multiplying. Okay. By the way, I put my notes online if you want notes. I tend to write on the board exactly what I write here. So you don't have to take notes if you don't want. All right, why care? Why care? I mean, that's a big question, right? Why care? Why, listen for at least the next 5 minutes. Okay, so one. Continuing on with this diagram here. Let's take a very easy Hopf algebra. Let's take K in the first column. Then you pick up the category of K vector spaces in the second column. And I don't know, people tend to care about commutative K algebras. I mean, some people have actually made a career of it. So commutative K algebras tend to be important, I guess. Okay. Another reason that you might care is if you want to soup up these algebraic structures over here, you can pick up natural examples, canonical examples of bi-algebroids, Hopf algebroids, using braided commutative algebras. So you get bi-algebroids. And what these are bi-algebras with a base algebra more general or typically larger than K. And it's worth going through this a little bit. This is actually a result of Berendzinski and also Militaru, and they generalized Lu, paper in 95. How does it go? Let's take a bialgebra, call it H, and assume that you have an object A that's an H module, and it's also an H co-module on the left. So that means that you have an action of H on the left, and you have a coaction of H on the left as well. Now, if you get that H is actually an object in a category of Yetter Dreamfeld modules, what that means is that it's an H module and a left H co-module, so that it has this compatibility condition here. So let me throw this here. H, co-multiply, keep this straight, act, and then I'm going to braid. Oh, Lord. Oh, Jesus. As you can see, I just learned how to do this. Okay.
Sorry, the outline is the straight line is an A line, or?
Yeah, the straight line's an A line.
And then?
Braid, then multiply, boom. Okay, there we go. I want that to equal, all right, let's see. Now, my A line's gonna be a little different. Go around, like so. I have an H line. How do people draw these diagrams fast? I do not know. I see, okay, people do slides. That's what they do. Yeah, you do slides. Okay. All right, you know, that's what I get for trying to be fancy. Shit. Okay, connect. Boom. Okay. That's a Yetter Dreamfeld condition. You want these two conditions to hold. So you want A to be an H. So left Yetter Dreamfeld module. It's just a compatibility condition between these two structures here. Not only that, if you have that A, it's actually a commutative algebra in this. This is actually a braided monoidal category. Okay. If you have that A is actually a commutative algebra in this braided monoidal category, you get that the smash product algebra, or actually the Raffer byproduct or bosonization, whatever you want to call it, this is actually a bialgebroid with base algebra A. And in fact, they get the converse result as well. So this is really nice. You get that braided commutative algebras have some purpose in terms of creating bialgebroids and half algebroids. Okay, maybe you don't care. How about this one? Let's see. They're also important in CFTs. Whoa, I know a lot of people like this. Okay, so what do you get? You have that so-called extended chiral algebras. These are actually going to arise as commutative algebras in modular tensor categories. All right. So this is due to work of Fuchs, Runkel, Schweigart, also Frohlich as well, and also Kongenrunkel. So what exactly is a modular tensor category? That would take probably 40 minutes to define. But what I'll tell you is that it is a braided monoidal category with extra structure. And the prototypical example is a representation category of a vertex operator algebra. Okay, so what exactly does this boil down to algebraically? What this really pertains to is Morita equivalence. All right, so let's recall that if I have two algebras, say K algebras, if they're Morita invariant, meaning that their category of modules are isomorphic, what you get is that their centers are isomorphic as commutative algebras. Now you have a similar result for algebras and monoidal categories. I can take A and A prime. For C being a monoidal category, nothing more. And what you get is that if the category of modules, left modules, with objects in C over A, is equivalent to the category of modules, objects in C over A prime, then you get, I'm just going to make up some notation for a minute, you get that the so-called full center, which I'll define, these are actually going to be isomorphic algebras in the category of commutative algebras of the Dreamfield center, or the monoidal center of C. So you have to leave C in order to get a Morita invariant, right? So this is called the full center, which we'll discuss in a little bit. And this is the monoidal center. So there is a categorical version of Morita equivalence. Now, what does this have to do with point three? The application due to Fuchs, Runkel, and Swigert is that in a case where C is actually a modular tensor category, you have that these Morita equivalence classes distinguish rational two-dimensional CFTs with the same boundary condition. So Morita equivalence classes of certain algebras, namely Frobenius and non-degenerate algebras in C, these give you unique rational two-dimensional CFTs with the same boundary condition. Okay. All right. Any questions on the motivation? Okay. All right. So what we want to do here is...
Sorry, for the last point, was it important that A was commutative, H commutative? No, where is that coming from or entering your...
Here? Oh, where does commutativity fall into play?
In point four.
I'm sorry. Yeah, these are commutative algebras as well. No. It's important because if A and A prime are Morita equivalent, you want that their centers, which are commutative algebras. How do I say this? Okay. So if you have the A and A prime are Morita invariant, you get that their centers are isomorphic as commutative algebras in this bigger category. So you care about commutative algebras in this braided monoidal category. You can pick C to be rep H, and then you could talk about H commutative, but this works in general. In fact, in this result, you actually get the converse as well in the modular case when A and A prime are simple. Okay. So what we want to do is there's a lot of setup in this paper of Fuchs, Runkel, and Swigert, and also work of Davidoff to study these commutative algebras here. We want to generalize that. So we want to generalize their so-called full center construction. Their full center construction to get commutative algebras and Morita invariants more generally. Okay, what exactly does this boil down to? So this boils down to swapping out this swapping out this monoidal center here to a slightly different category. So this boils down to swapping out this monoidal center with this gadget called a relative monoidal center, which will be defined in a minute. But first, let's discuss what this is. Again, this is a bigger category. You're looking at commutative algebras in this bigger category. So I'll tell you what the objects are. the objects consist of objects in the smaller category C, and these isomorphisms called half-bradings. So basically, you want to be able to stick in any object and swap across a tensor. Okay? And you get that now this is also braided monoidal as well. So the prototypical example of a center is if you take C to be rep H, then you get that the monoidal center in this case is actually equivalent to the category of Yoder-Dreenfeld modules over H, just like over there. And this is also equivalent to the category of representations of the Dreenfeld double of H as well. Let's take H to be finite dimensional Hopf. Okay. So that's quite nice. I mean, it's well understood. It's been used a lot. The benefit of using now these relative monoidal centers is that the main examples over here are going to be representation categories of quantized enveloping algebras. You start picking these up on the nose. All right, so now I need to tell you what Davidoff did. Again, building on FRS, give you our setup, and then tell you what we do, and give you examples. Oh, man. This is like my only workout. I teach and I give talks and I burn like, I don't know, 300 calories. As some of you hike and rock climb, I sweat a lot giving talks.
Have you defined the relative monoidal center yet?
Nope, going to, just a preview. Nope. Just a preview. Okay, so Davidoff. And this is just still background. So in 2010 and 2012, he built up some machinery, and again, generalizing Fuchs, Runkel, and Schweigart from the modular setting to just the braided monoidal setting in order to build commutative algebras and also Morita invariants discussed as follows. So what you do is you start with just a monoidal category, any one you like. Then you have its monoidal center over here, which is now braided. You can always forget the half braiding to get a functor from here to here. Now let's suppose that there exists a right adjoint. So if there exists a right adjoint going from C back to its center, then you get that this right adjoint, let's call it R. R is lax monoidal. So what that allows you to do is to take an algebra in C and cook up an algebra in your center, just an algebra, not commutative yet. Then what you can do is you can apply this construction called the left center construction that works for braided monoidal categories that allows you to take an algebra in a braided monoidal category and build a commutative algebra in it. So now using the left center construction, what you get is a nice mechanism for taking an algebra and now this braided monoidal category and building a commutative algebra in it. What exactly does it do? Well, you can take, so let's say CL of D, where D is an algebra in here. This is going to be the maximal subobject of D so that you have commutativity. So that MD, your multiplication map on D, is the same thing as applying the braiding, because now you're working with the braiding, and then composing with multiplication. All right, so you can go from algebras in C to commutative algebras in ZC, one way. He also produced a direct way of going from algebras in your given monodal category to commutative algebras in your center. And this is what he called the full center construction, again, building on Fuchs, Runkel, and Schweiger in the modular case. So I'll denote the resulting algebra by Z of A, just like center. So what exactly is it? It's an object in your center, which is a braided monodal category, equipped with a map going from the center back down to A, and this map has to happen in C now, that's terminal. That's terminal amongst all such pairs that have this behavior. So that's terminal amongst all pairs. Let's say X and a map chi going from X to A so that the following diagram commutes. I want to be able to swap. And then I have my map chi identity. Same thing on the other side here. And then I want to multiply. Okay. So terminal objects in monodal categories are algebras. Terminal objects in braided monodal categories are commutative algebras. So this full center construction does indeed produce a commutative algebra. What he established, one of the main theorems, was that these two routes going from algebras in C to commutative algebras in ZC are actually the same. He actually showed that the full center is the same thing as taking the left center, the right adjoint of A, again, as commutative algebras in ZC. But this, again, all dependent on this right adjoint actually existing. He also showed that when C is more concretely the category representations of H, you get that R exists, and this category, or I mean this algebra, is actually really nice. You get that now this is a not a center, but a centralizer algebra. A centralizer algebra, right? And then as mentioned before, you have that your full center is also a Morita invariant. So the upshot is that centers serve as Morita invariants for algebras in VEC, but when C is a category representation of a Hopf algebra, the centralizer algebras then serve as Morita invariants of algebras in Rep H. Okay, any questions? None. All right, so what we want to do now is we want to kick this up a notch. So Davidoff went from the modular setting to braided. And what we want to do is go from this setting to the B augmented setting. And again, the advantage of that is we start picking up more interesting categories like representations of quantum groups and so on. So I need to tell you what a B augmented category is and also what a relative monodal center is as well before I give the results. Oh man, such a workout. Okay, so now our setting. Not only gonna work with monoidal categories, but monoidal categories that are so-called braided. This setting is actually due to my co-author. I mean, I heard him give a talk on this paper about this framework, and I really liked it. And I thought, well, we could generalize Javadoff's result in this setting. So it's really cool the way it worked out. Okay, what do you do? We have to take like a sort of a base braided monoidal category. Okay. Then we say that a monoidal category, C, is so-called B augmented, if it comes equipped with the following data. First of all, we want a functor that goes from C down to the base, B. And we also want to be able to go back up from the base to C. We denote those functors by F and T, respectively. And we're also going to require natural isomorphisms. So if we apply T and then F, we get that that's naturally isomorphic to the identity functor on B. And then we want something to kind of mimic the braiding in a way. So let's call this map tau. Another natural isomorphism given by sigma is going to be as follows. We want to be able to apply the identity in one slot and then T and be able to swap. And that's the same thing as doing this with the opposite. Okay, and then of course, when you start throwing together structures, you have lots of compatibility conditions. But the main one is that we want sigma to descend via F down to the braiding of B. So that sigma descends to F, or descends to psi via F, plus compatibility.
And C was a new operation? Sigma was a new operation, sorry.
Wait.
Sigma is a natural isomorphism between its two functors.
Yeah.
That's part of the data, I guess.
Yeah, it's part of the data. Let's give an example.
Sorry, and F and C are both monoidal isomorphisms?
Yes. Monoidal functors. Okay. Let's give an example. Main example.
So if I know the Dirichlet centers, could I have said some of this in terms of like mapping B into the center of C, or would that be something else?
Well, we're going to cook up a version of the monoidal center with this data in like a few minutes. Yeah, so I think you might like
it. Essentially, lines on the boundary and lines in some bound, right? I mean, topological field theory, this would be, B would be lines in three-dimensional space, and C would be lines on some boundary of this three-dimensional space.
Maybe.
That sounds more like that data is usually kind of the form, a map from B to the center of C. Ooh. At least in the Fuchs-Wimpel Schreger picture.
Well,
boundary map is like B goes to the center of C.
Right. This is...
All right, let's soup up rep H in this B augmented setting. So what do you need to do? You have that B is braided, so you can take a Hopf algebra in it. Okay, then you can build C to be the category of H modules in B, with objects in B. So this is a category of left H modules in B. Now this is monoidal. It's monoidal in the same way that rep H is monoidal. So what are the objects? The objects are objects in B equipped with some action map. And if I wanted to tensor that together with another object, being an object in B and its action map, then you get that the result is now the tensor product of objects in B and the action map going from H tensor V tensor W to V tensor W is given as follows. You apply the co-multiplication, tensor the identity, in the first slot, you have H tensor H, V tensor W. Then you braid all of it's in B, so you can now braid the braiding of B, the middle two factors. And then you can act and act. Okay. This is the main example of a B augmented category. So not only is it monoidal, it's B augmented as well. Okay, so what are the functors here? First of all, we can take F going from this category, H mod B to B. This can be just a forgetful functor. You can forget the H action. Now, what is this functor T? What do you do here? You could take any object you like in B, and you could give it the structure of a trivial H module. So trivial H module on X. So under this, you get these axioms. You get that FT is naturally isomorphic to identity, and you have this axiom as well. Let me give an example of this example, just to be really concrete.
Question?
Yes.
Could I give a similar example if H was a braided commutative algebra?
Yeah, I mean, well, okay. Let's see. If H were braided commutative algebra.
It could be what?
If I say H should be a braided commutative algebra.
Probably you're gonna lose this FT iso.
Yeah, I don't know if these will hold.
Okay.
I don't know.
We need to discover a boundary. If you need for the what is something like
Hofer? Oh my God. I swear when I teach I spend like but 5% of the class complaining about erasing. I need a student to follow behind me and erase for me. Let's do an example of this. Let's take B to be category of K modules, where now K is going to be the group algebra in Zn with the R matrix given as follows. 1 over N means the one you probably seen over and over again. Looks like so. G to the I tends to G to the J. Okay, and then here we want N to be greater than or equal to 3. We're taking Q squared to be nth root of unity. And we're taking Zn to be generated by some element G. Okay, let's call this braiding psi Q squared. All right, so there's B, there's your base. Let's take a Hopf algebra in it. Some finite dimensional algebra, polynomial ring, modulo X to the N. It's a Hopf algebra in B. Okay, where you consider its generator to be primitive, as usual. Then the category of H modules with objects and K modules is actually going to be equivalent to the bosonization of K acting on H. But more concretely, I mean, this is a Hopf algebra, and it actually arises as a Taft algebra. So this is generated by two elements, this G and X, subject to the relations of G, subject to the relations of, subject to the relations of K, subject to the relations of H, and G moves past H according to the braiding. This algebra, you might recognize it, is really the positive part of UQSL2, the positive Borel part of UQSL2. So as you can see, we pick up half of the quantum group. And when we take the relative monoidal center, we're going to pick up the whole quantum group. All right, so this works in general. You can take, you can cook up the positive real part of all of your quantum groups, big and small, not necessarily finite dimensional. Now, what is the relative monoidal center? What is it? Well, should I keep it up? Okay, I told you before that the monoidal center consists of objects in C and half braidings. What you do is you keep all your objects in C, but you only take some half braidings, mainly the ones that behave well with the B augmentation. Can I step on this? Okay. So again, this is due to my co-author. Okay, so what do you have? You have that the relative monoidal center, Z, B of C, where here C is a B augmented monoidal category, it's going to be the following. First of all, it consists of objects. I'm not going to write the whole definition, but it consists of objects V and only some half-bradings here. First of all, I mean, you want your half-brading to be compatible with the tensor structure as usual, just like over there. Compatible with the tensor structure of C. But you want your half-bradings to be a little more restricted. So for instance, if I slide in the object, let's say coming from B in the second slot, bump that up with T, I get an object in C. I want that braiding to be the same thing as sigma on VB below. Okay, so this is compatible with B augmentation. Okay, so some nice properties of these relative monoidal centers. Again, due to my co-author. First of all, if I take my base to be VEC, which is what we were working with over here, then you get your usual monoidal center. All right? Secondly, in general, you get that your relative monoidal centers are always a full subcategory of your usual monoidal centers. So you have your relative monoidal centers. It's always a full subcategory of ZC. Okay? And third of all, if you start off with a category that's rigid or pivotal, so is the relative monoidal center. All right, so to give you an example, just to finish this up, the examples. So the example continued, actually. In the case where you have that your B augmented category is a category of H modules in B, you get that your relative monoidal center is actually equivalent to the category of H Yetter-Drinkfeld modules with objects in B. Defined the same way as you would if B were VEC, except you're taking objects in B. You also get that this is equivalent to, well, not modules over the Drinkfeld double, but modules over the so-called braided Drinkfeld double. And this is defined by my co-author. But you've seen this elsewhere in the literature, known as a double bosonization due to Magie as well. Okay, so again, as an example of an example, if we take C to be UQSL2 plus, like we had over there, you get that the relative monoidal center is now the representation category of the full quantum group. So we start picking up quantum groups right on the nose. And likewise, if I want to take the relative monoidal center of...
Which B there?
Hmm?
What is B?
What's B? This example? Oh, this is continuing. This is continuing.
These guys.
Yeah, these.
Yeah.
Okay. So likewise, if I were to take the relative monoidal center of, let's say, rep of UQB plus for some Lie group G with respect to the Cartan part, then you start picking up, you get the whole quantum group. Okay, big or small. All right, so there's this setup. What do we do exactly? Our theorem is basically we take all these results and we're able to put these in the B augmented setting. Okay. So you start with a B augmented monodal category. And instead you consider the forgetful functor from the B augmented or the relative monodal center to C. If there exists a right adjoint given like so, then the right adjoint has to be lax monoidal and it sends algebras in your B augmented category to algebras in the relative monodal center. We're also, because ZB is braided, we have, or ZBC is braided, we also can use the left center construction to then start with an algebra in the relative monodal center and construct commutative algebras in a relative monodal center. And the left center is defined in the same way. This is defined for general braided monodal categories. We also produced a direct route, now referred to as the, not the full center, but the, we'll call it the B center, going from algebras in, oh, this is supposed to, yeah, algebras in C. Algebras in C to algebras, commutative algebras in the braided monoidal center, defined like so and denoted like so. So it's defined in the same way. I mean, all I'm doing is just decorating this with B's, but it took a lot more work to do that in a paper than just decorate with B's. Okay, at the end of the day, we established that our B center is the same thing as taking the left center of our right adjoint of A. This is as commutative algebras in the relative monoidal center. And all of this setup depended on a right adjoint existing.
So, maybe I should ask this before. Are you saying that the direct route also depends on the existence of the right adjoint?
Oh, the result. The result does, but not this. Yeah. Yeah, I should make that clear. Okay, now we show that when C is now not H mod with B equal to VEC, but just H mod B, as given here, we get that our functor exists, and we're able to construct a braided centralizer algebra. So that works in the B augmented setting. And, oh, it's supposed to be read invariant. And then we get that our B centers are also Morita invariants for algebras in C. Okay. So the main point of difficulty is that we have to deal with two braidings. Mostly. That was pretty much the hardest part. We have an internal braiding. So you have two braidings. We have an internal braiding of B. And then we have this external braiding on the Yetter Dreamfield category or wherever we're working with, or just on Z, B of C in general. So we had to be pretty careful there. So along with these applications, I just wanted to give some other consequences of this setup. All right, so besides getting now commutative algebras, in representation categories of quantum groups for free, We also get Morita invariants that are actually a little easier to compute. Okay, so let me break that down. So for example, if I have that C is the representation category of a bosonization, as we had over there, or if you like, category of H modules in K modules, or K is quasi-triangular. In order to get Morita invariants, you can study algebras in its monoidal center, Or you can study algebras in its relative monoidal center. Okay, now its monoidal center is going to be equivalent to the representation category of the Dreamfield double of this algebra, which as a K-vector space, you have H and K, but then you also have duals of these structures as well. So it's like you have four sets of generators for this Hopf algebra. But here, you have that now this gets replaced with a braided version of the Dreamfield double. And its set of generators is slightly smaller. This is, a double bosonization according to Majid. And you have that a set of generators is K and H again, but here you only need one copy of H. So this is a smaller algebra to deal with. Let's take the extreme case of this. Let's suppose that H is actually K. So you're looking at just K mod B and C. So an extreme case. So if H were just K here. Here, you're still left with the Dreamfield double of some group for the most case, or the Dreamfield double of K. Here, you're left with K mod. So you get that, in this case, C is actually equivalent to B, and so is the relative monoidal center. So I guess the main point is that we don't have to leave the category in order to get Morita invariants. And this holds actually for C being braided. Because if C were braided, you get that it's augmented over itself. So this result was actually stated really vaguely in a paper of Ostrich. The fact that you can actually use the left center as a Morita variant. But here, I mean, we show explicitly that the left center is our B full center. So this is your Morita invariant. Okay. All right, now I just want to end on one example. Just one example just to show you how this works. Do I want to erase? Maybe I'll keep this up. Just one example. So now, okay, we have that K is this group algebra here with this braiding. H is this Hopf algebra in the braided monoidal category. And then when you take C, the category of H modules, in the category of K modules, we get the category of representations of the Taft algebra, or if you like, the positive part of UQSL2. Let's take an algebra in C. So now, let's continue. Let's take an algebra, really simple algebra. Let's say a commutative polynomial ring in C. And its action by this Hopf algebra down here is given as follows. G can act on the generator U by sending it to Q to the minus 2U.
G is the Cartan generator, is that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then X, the generator of H, is going to act on U by sending it to any scalar you like. That gives you a Hopf action. And that enables the polynomial ring to be an algebra now in this category C. What you get is that now the B center, where B again is this K mod, you have two cases. First of all, you have a case where X acts trivially, in other words, gamma is zero, and a case where gamma is not zero. In the first case, you have All of H. Tensor. A polynomial subalgebra of A. So you have a pretty big center. On the other hand, when gamma is not equal to zero, yeah, you pick up a polynomial ring again, that's it. But the variable is a little complicated. I mean, z now is, let's see, going from 1 to n minus 1 of gamma to the minus I. It's an ugly term. I mean, I'll admit that. It's long. Just write it out. Okay. X to the I. Okay, so you have a complicated variable, but you do get a polynomial ring. The upshot is that these two algebras are not isomorphic. Therefore, you have that A with the Hopf action structure where X acts trivially, and A with the Hopf action structure that X doesn't act trivially, these are not Morita equivalent. These are not Morita equivalent as algebras in C. Okay. All right, that's all I wanted to say. If you have any questions, please let me know, and thank you for listening.
Questions for Chelsea?
I try to end on time, 3 o'clock.
We're not very precise here. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
In your examples, do you have condition for your Q?
Q? Yeah, Q. Yeah, continuing this. So Q is a root of unity. Q squared is an nth root of unity in particular. Mm-hmm.
So I know that Robert has been sort of thinking about, you know, this like cyclotomic categorification stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Is that in part?
Not that I'm aware of.
Inspired? No?
No. Okay. No. From my understanding, he really likes Majid's work. Mm-hmm. I think he was looking at his double bosonization paper and thought that he could generalize that. Yeah.
Maybe I have 3 questions, but I probably won't get all of them. So the first one, just in this last example, if I studied this example more carefully, like you said that the center was K adjoin Z. But like that center is still an object in some category. If I study it sort of, if I look very closely, can I tell apart the different values of gamma from how this object is an object in some category?
Not sure I understand the question. So
like if gamma is 1 versus gamma is 2, are those two Morita equivalent algebras?
Yeah, actually, yeah, because you get, I mean, basically, you could rescale this action to get something isomorphic, more than Morita equivalent. You get actually isomorphic on the nose by rescaling generators.
So you mentioned this example about the representation theory of the quantum group as well as center.
Mm-hmm.
So do you understand how the fiber functor behaves with respect to this? Does it factor through taking it back to the?
I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. That's actually a really good question.
Thank you, Jessica.
Okay, thank you for listening.